It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up with Senator Joe Manchin saying he opposes President Biden's Build Back Better plan. What happens with proposals for climate change, child care, Medicare expansion, and more? We'll look at what Manchin has had to say and where we go from here. First, after mostly being barred from the box office in 2020, movie fans were allowed, at least in part, to return to in-person theaters over the last year. At the same time, 2021 continued a major theme from the previous year, movies released directly to streaming services. Whether you go to the theater or watch at home, is there anything out there worth watching? We want to hear what you think at 800-642-1234. Did you go back to a movie theater this year? What was your experience like? What did you see? Did you only watch movies at home this year? Did you watch some new releases when they came out on streaming services? Do you have recommendations of great movies you saw this year that other people ought to check out? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Reggie Ponder is back with us, also known as The Real Critic. He reviews films for Vocalo Radio in Chicago and other media outlets. Reggie, welcome back.
Hey, Rob, how are you? I'm glad to be back, man.
Good to have you back. Now, you've been seeing lots of movies. Before we get to what to watch, let's talk about how you watched. Did you make it back to theaters this year?
I made it back to theaters a couple of times for some special screenings and maybe once or twice with almost full crowds. And I will tell you, I felt a little nervous with the full crowds, even though it was before the Omicron variant came out. But I don't know, Rob, if the theaters have fully rebounded, and my litmus test is not only the numbers that you see out in the market, but also what you see when you go to the theater, is that you see that the theaters are not opening in Chicago until after 4 o'clock, when they would be opening at 10 o'clock, so they can't find workers. They also don't have enough people going out to see the film. So really interesting environment right now.
That said, amidst all those concerns, what was it like for you? Movies aren't just your job. You really like movies. What was it like for you to get back into a theater?
For particular movies, it's almost like you have to go. So I saw Spider-Man. We will not talk about the movie yet, but I saw Spider-Man, and it's a movie that I'm so glad I saw in a theater as opposed to at home. I saw The Matrix, and to me, you have to be in the theater to see The Matrix. However, it is being dual released, so a lot of people will take safety over entertainment and stay at home and watch that as well.
What are we seeing in trends with dual releases or even just skipping the theater, going straight to some kind of streaming service?
It really depends. It depends on the movie. When you look at a movie like No Time to Die, it did really well at the box office. I think now it's like the third highest Bond movie out there. But when you look at a movie like King Richard, which was also dual release, it did not do well at the box office. But a lot of people watched it. It got an A from CinemaScore and like a 96 from Rotten Tomatoes. So people liked it, people watched it, but they didn't go into the theaters to see it. So it really is a mixed bag, and it depends on what movie it is.
Well, you foreshadowed the first movie we're going to talk about, Spider-Man No Way Home. That's the big release right now. Here's a listen to Spider-Man and a fellow named Doctor Strange, setting up a little bit of the movie's plot.
What is this place?
The mirror dimension, where I'm in control.
Strange, stop. Can we please just talk about this?
Parker, don't you realize that in the multiverse, there are an infinite number of people who know Peter Parker is Spider-Man? And if that spell gets loose, they're all coming here.
Look, I know, I get it, but we can't just send them home to die.
It's their fate. You can't change that any more than you can change who they are.
Pretty dramatical. Reggie, what's your verdict on the new Spider-Man?
This is a must-see for Spider-Man fans. It's a must-see for the MCU fans. What Marvel does, what Marvel does, they look for ways to connect the MCU where no one movie stands alone, but it still can stand alone, if you understand what I'm saying. So it's about Spider-Man, but it's connected to the MCU. And if you are a Spider-Man, an MCU fan, you will be excited. You'll be excited about the people who help Spider-Man defeat some villains. You'll be excited about the villains who will come, and you'll be excited about just some of the jokes and the humor that you get from a Marvel movie. It was enjoyable. I had a lot of fun, Rob. I think I'm going to go see that one again.
Excellent. Now, I've had some experiences like in Avengers movies where there's so much set up for the Marvel Cinematic Universe and, so, you know, touching base with stuff that it seems to maybe get in the way of the plot. You didn't feel that way, obviously, with this one, though.
No. I actually can see where you're coming from with that. And I think that that's probably a valid criticism, is because they do try to connect everything. And maybe sometimes it's like, okay, let's just stay here. But I think they stayed with Spider-Man and Mary Jane and his little crew for the most part, even though they were the villains. There are so many surprises in this that I can't talk about it too much because I wouldn't want to spoil it for people, but this is one that's absolutely worth going to check out.
Well, let's follow Benedict Cumberbatch, Doctor Strange and the Spider-Man movie outside of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, a Netflix release called The Power of the Dog. I saw some talk about this one, didn't see it. You did. What did you think?
I did. And this is a director, Jane Campion. This is her first time directing, and she directs this beautifully. The story, the acting is fantastic. She pulled out some phenomenal performances from Benedict Cumberbatch, Kristen Dunst, Jesse Plemons, and Cody Smith McPhee was phenomenal to me. So this really great acting, great directing, but it didn't move me. It didn't move me like it moved a lot of my counterparts who really, really like this one. This will be one of the movies that'll come up for Best Picture, and it's just not Best Picture for me, even though it was very, very well done. And it's set in the Western time, but it's not really a Western, if you will, because you're not getting a shootout or someone corralling people. It's not that kind of Western.
We are talking about the movies of the year with Reggie Ponder, also known as Reggie the Real Critic. You could join in at 800-642-1234. What movies have you seen? How did you watch them? Do you have one to recommend? Or did you want to ask Reggie for a recommendation or his pick or pan of a particular new movie? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Let's go to House of Gucci, another big one people are seeing now. Lady Gaga, Adam Driver, Patricia Reggiani, who married into the wealthy Gucci fashion company. That's the story. Here's a clip of the two of them in the movie talking about some knockoffs, those famous knockoffs of Gucci products.
Who is making this stuff? Who's allowing this to happen?
As far as fakes go, they're pretty good. I mean, I'd buy them.
Don't be such a cretin.
Don't call me a cretin, sweetie.
That's not what I said. I asked you not to be one. This is serious. And you're laughing it off.
At least it's my name on the mugs, not yours.
Our name, sweetie, on Jack.
All right. Was this a knockoff, Reggie, or the real deal, House of Gucci?
It depends. It depends on your point of view. When I looked at my critic friends, this on something like a Rotten Tomatoes, I think got like a 60% from critics. But I liked this film, and I liked it because Lady Gaga brought it. This is her film. She is good. Her and Adam Driver together, they light up the screen, and their interaction is great. I understand what some people, it has some lulls here, but it is about a murder, and it's a true story, and Lady Gaga absolutely shines. This is one of those movies that if you don't see in the theater, definitely see it at home with the family. I think you'll enjoy it and have some fun with it.
We are talking to Reggie Ponder, Reggie the Real Critic, looking at the movies of 2021. You can join in at 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Brandy writes, once they opened, my husband was back. He loves the theater. I love streaming, Brandy says. What do you think? How do you watch movies? Is there a movie that really worked for you? Good escapism or fun stuff or serious stuff? Or do you need a recommendation? Call 800-642-1234. We'll pick up a conversation coming up on Central Time.
Life can be bright in America.
If you can fight in America.
Life is all right in America.
If you're all white in America.
You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our conversation about the year in movies with the real critic, Reggie Ponder. A little West Side Story there for you. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your favorite or least favorite movies of the year and maybe how you saw them. That's 800-642-1234. Let's go to a caller. Adam is with us on the road in Edgerton. Hi, Adam.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What did you see?
We saw West Side Story. It was fantastic. I was a little worried about it being redone, but it was really spot on. It was fantastic. The dancing and singing was amazing. The theater, as I had said, was absolutely empty. So good and bad. It was nice to be able to spread out, but I feel bad for the theaters themselves as far as their business. The movie was fantastic.
Were you a fan, Adam, of the original West Side Story?
Absolutely. So I was super excited to have my kids go. Hoping that they would get into it, and I don't think this one disappointed at all.
Adam, thank you so much for sharing that. Reggie, West Side Story.
You don't need me. Adam, he just said what I would have said, is that the singing and the dancing in this was fantastic. And particularly, I want to point out Ariana DeBose, who she could sing, she could dance, she just stole the show. Everybody in this was great. And then the fact that they were able to bring back Rita Moreno, at 91 years old, she came back and plays an important role in this particular one. They did a really good job. Spielberg, I like you.
Thanks a lot for that call at 800-642-1234. Here's another one. I haven't seen it yet. With my nerd history, of course, I'm interested in Dune. Here's the Herald of the Change and Oscar Isaac as Duke Leto Atreides. Here's a listen.
The Emperor has spoken. House Atreides shall immediately take control of Arrakis and serve as its steward. Do you accept?
We are House Atreides. There is no call we do not answer. There is no faith that we betray. The Emperor asks us to bring peace to Arrakis. House Atreides accepts!
Atreides!
I'm sure that'll all go smoothly. Reggie, what did you think of Dune?
This is an epic film. This is one of those films that you really do want to see on the big screen because how massive it is. I will tell you is that the theme of this film in terms of these resources that you need to, that people fight over, almost like oil, and in this case, salt, really mirrors some things that happens in real life. So it has some important messages in it, and it really looks really good on the big screen. I will tell people who are thinking that they will see Zendaya, she is like in 1/8 of the film because they're really setting up the second one, which has now been greenlit. So it was good. It wasn't great, and because I think they really, it's kind of like what you just said, Rob, in terms of the MCU, is they were setting up for the second one. They really were setting this up for the second one. So good. And now I have to see the second one.
Yeah, as I understand, I mean, there's the first Dune book. The movie doesn't cover the whole thing. It's only a half to 2/3 of the book. So they were clearly hoping that they could do a sequel movie, I guess.
Absolutely. And I don't know what this one costs to make. Usually they'll put that out there. But it looks like they spent a pretty penny on this one. So they are fortunate to be able to get to the second one. From a money perspective, it's been out 9 weeks and it's only made $107 million.
Well, they use technology from the planet Ix in Dune. Let's go to Ixonia now with Katie on the line. Katie, hi.
Hi.
Hi, what'd you want to tell us about?
Just We are so excited to be back in the theater, especially our little local theater in Watertown. It's called Town Cinema. My husband and I were part of the original campaign some years back to save the theater. And now that they're back open, we support them as much as we can. And we're going tonight to see Spider-Man.
Katie, what does it mean to you to have that local? And is this downtown?
Yeah, it's right on Main Street in Watertown.
Great. Thank you so much for sharing that, Katie. And that's, I love it when I see smaller towns have that Main Street, or whatever the equivalent of Main Street theater is, Reggie. People can go downtown still and see a movie. Yeah. But it seems like it's a dying breed.
It is, but I think that some of the independent theaters might be able to survive. As you know, during COVID, a number of them have closed down, and even some of the chains have closed down as well. So it's really good that Katie is supporting the local one, because they're going to need that. They're going to absolutely need that support.
Thanks a lot for that call, Katie, at 800-642-1234. We were looking at the movies of 2021, whether you watch them in a theater or you watch them on streaming. Love to hear your story, your favorites. If you went in, what was it like? Were you nervous from a health perspective? Was it good to be back in a theater again? Do you have a favorite movie? Do you need a recommendation? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Reggie, you mentioned the new Matrix movie. Want to give a little listen here. This is Neo, Keanu Reeves, meeting some new friends.
Set and setting, right?
Oh, no.
It's all about set and setting.
After our first contact went so badly, we thought elements from your past might help ease you into the present.
Nothing comforts anxiety like a little nostalgia.
All right, The Matrix Resurrections. Was it worth resurrecting, Reggie?
It was. I think that between Spider-Man and The Matrix, it might do the theaters really well. I know that the new variant might impact that, mm-hmm. but this is probably shaping up, with these two movies, shaping up to be a good box office. You think about this. You get Keanu Reeves and Carrie Ann Moss, they're back. That means you got Neo and Trinity. That's all you need. I would say, when I sum this movie up, what you won't do for love. Because that's what this is about. And it's very interesting and intricate. And they go back and make sure that if you didn't see the first three, they make sure that you understand what's going on here. Really good job. Yahya Abdul-Mateen, the second, is in it and does a great job as well. So this is one I would absolutely go out to the theaters and watch. But we already know that we have a few people running out already.
Let's go back to our callers now. Pam is with us in Appleton. Pam, hi.
Hi, how you doing?
Good. What did you see, Pam?
Yeah, so you know, my husband and I put on our masks and went to the movie theater to see the most recent James Bond film, No Time to Die, I think it's called.
Right.
And, yeah, so we're Bond fans. We're fans of the franchise, but this was a huge disappointment.
Oh, no. Why, Pam?
Well, you know, it really felt as though Daniel Craig was kind of phoning it in. Mm. And, you know, he's been kind of vocal in the past about, you know, wanting out of the series. And now, you know, he's gotten his wish. He's, you know, he's out of the series. But, you know, I think I thought you could tell that his heart wasn't in it.
Pam, thanks a lot. Did you see that, Reggie? I mean, that his heart wasn't in it?
I did. I disagree with Pam on this one. I don't think he phoned it in. I think it's the story. And I think that it's also a different kind of James Bond. The type of James Bond that was probably considered more like a womanizer, here he's not. So there's just stuff that doesn't happen in this kind of film that you're probably used to with a James Bond. And this is probably one of the weaker stories that they've had in a long time. And I don't think that's Craig's fault. I think it really starts with the writing on this.
Pam, thanks a lot for sharing that. Now, Reggie, as you know, you see lots of movies. I see very few. Right. If you were the superhero, you'd be movie man. I'd be Captain No Movie Guy. But I want to let you know, I have seen at least one movie on your list, The Summer of Soul. I streamed that amazing, I thought, from the Stevie Wonder drum solo kick all the way through. Talk about the Summer of Soul, please.
The Summer of Soul happened during the same time period of Woodstock, and it was filmed. It was over, I think, a 5-week period, mm-hmm. and it was held in New York, in Harlem, and they got so many stars to come and perform there. And if you saw it, they couldn't even scratch the surface with all of the people from a Nina Simone, a Stevie Wonder, Temptations, just so many people. And it had been sitting, this footage had been sitting in someone's basement for 50 years. They couldn't find a television station to air it. They couldn't find some place to put together a set so people could buy it. And finally, Questlove from The Roots, he put this together to make people remember that this happened. And it was a fantastic time. I am so glad that he resurrected this one. The music, the time period, that they also talk about the importance of it as well. And so, wow, Summer of Soul, a must-see.
All right. In our last minute or so, Reggie, people will be maybe hunkering down a little bit for the holidays. Anything from this year you'd suggest might be a good thing to watch at home with the family in the next week or two?
Yes, for the people who love Shakespeare, King Richard. Let me back up.
Sure.
King Richard is a family movie. It's about Richard Williams, who was the father of the two greatest tennis players of all time, Serena and Venus Williams. It is a really great watch from a family perspective, of cinema score and Rotten Tomatoes rated really high. I think Rotten Tomatoes 98, cinema score A. But for people who like Shakespeare, The Tragedy of Macbeth, you will absolutely love this one. This is with Denzel Washington and Frances McDormand, and they are both really, really good. For people who like musicals, Tick, Tick, Boom with this is Lin-Manuel Miranda's directorial debut with Andrew Garfield, and it's about a theater composer who's waiting tables in New York, and he ends up writing this musical, and it's a true story. So it's the true story of the guy who wrote, Rent, who did the musical Rent. So that one is worth watching. And then In the Heights is also good. If people like West Side Story, I think they'll also like In the Heights. So that's one that I would say. And then finally, I would recommend that people see... I'm trying to make sure.
We're out of time, Reggie. That's Reggie Ponder, the Real Critic. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, ruined cities, ornate tombs, golden treasures, and more. Some of the most remarkable archaeological finds in global history are chronicled in a new book. We'll talk about their roles in human civilization and how archaeologists make sense of it all. Now, Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer says he'll hold a vote on the Build Back Better Act after the holidays, despite Joe Manchin's opposition to the bill. It wouldn't pass without Manchin's support, given that Republicans all say they'll vote against it, but Schumer says a vote would put every senator on the record. Manchin announced on Sunday morning that he won't back the plan. He told a West Virginia radio station yesterday that something specific happened during negotiations that pushed him over the edge.
They know the real reason. They're not going to tell us. You're not going to tell us. What do you mean? What's the real?
The bottom line is it's staff driven. I understand staff. This is not the president. This is staff. And they drove some things and they put some things out that were absolutely inexcusable. They know what it is and that's it.
Manchin didn't specify what turned him off, but has expressed concerns over the $2 trillion cost and some of the climate change provisions. He and Biden reportedly spoke by phone Sunday night and plan to speak again at some point in a press conference today. The president says there's still a chance of passing something, at least something like Build Back Better. You can join in at 800-642-1234. The Build Back Better plan you think be good for the United States, or are there certain parts of it you like, or should it be completely scrapped? Do you see Manchin as a hero or villain in this story, or a little of both? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@wpr.org. Stephen Smith is a distinguished professor of social sciences and professor of political science at Washington University in St. Louis. Stephen, welcome back to the show.
Great to be with you, Rob.
Well, it looks pretty bad for the Build Back Better Act right now. Do you think it's completely done? Do you see a chance of reviving it or something like it early next year?
I do not think it's completely done. I think there's a good chance that they'll be able to revive it. The president indicated this afternoon that he's not giving up. And even Joe Manchin has indicated some willingness to talk here over the last 24 hours. So I think they'll use the next couple of weeks to see if they can come up with a new plan. You may remember that a month or so ago, the White House reported a new framework. The House had already passed their version, and they knew the House version would not pass the Senate. So the Senate, so the White House, after discussing the plan with not only Manchin, but Kyrsten Sinema and other senators who had issues with the House plan, they came up with a new framework. They thought that that would be the pathway to getting an agreement in the Senate, at least among the Democrats. And that seems to have failed. It's obviously problematic at the moment. But we've got now a couple of weeks in which I think we're going to be hearing hearing little, but there will be plenty of private discussions going on between the White House and Manchin.
Before we get into the substance of the bill, I want to give another listen to Senator Manchin saying he wouldn't be pushed around during negotiations.
I'm not blaming anybody. I knew where they were, and I knew what they could and could not do. They just never realized it because they figure, surely to God, we can move one person. Surely we can badger and beat one person up. Surely we can get enough protesters to make that person uncomfortable enough. They'll just say, okay, I'll vote for anything. Just quit. Well, guess what? I'm from West Virginia. I'm not from where they're from, and they can just beat the living crap out of people and think they'll be submissive. Period.
Can you talk a little bit about the politics, the maneuvering, the pummeling that Joe Manchin describes there?
Well, you know, there's a little bit of a background that's really essential to understanding Senator Manchin. He's been running for office now for a couple of decades in West Virginia, and he's always fashioned himself as a different kind of Democrat, really not much of a Democrat at all. In his 2010 campaign, I think it was, he even put on an ad in which he actually used a gun to shoot a copy of the cap and trade program that Democrats were advocating at the time. And West Virginians, or at least Manchin, did not like the cap and trade program because it would encourage business, especially coal-fired plants, to find other forms of energy. So he's always been positioning himself as an outsider. He's not merely a moderate or a somewhat conservative Democrat. He's also an outsider. And that's a big part of his public reputation in West Virginia. So he approaches his work in Washington very much from that perspective. And those comments we just heard reflect that longstanding attitude he's had about being a West Virginian in Washington.
Let's bring on a caller now at 800-642-1234. Dan is with us in De Pere. Dan, hi.
Yeah, I'm just, the Democrats had better tread lightly here because it would be very easy for him to flip parties. He's from a very red state, and he would definitely win as a Republican senator there. So that's one observation. I also think he had two objections about the earned income tax credit. One was the income level of $200,000. He thought that was ridiculous that we're giving that kind of money to that kind of income. And also he wanted a work requirement that you really can't have an earned income tax credit if you don't have any earned income. So it's not supposed to be a welfare payment. I kind of agree with both of those assessments.
Dan, thanks a lot for the call. Let's get into that substantive part of the debate here. Stephen, the child tax credits, those additional ones we've seen in recent COVID relief packages, temporary, they would have been extended under this. Can you talk about the impact they've had and the concerns that our caller raised?
Well, the Democrats have favored the extension and expansion of the child tax credit by about $3,600. And of course, that's set to expire here very soon. So actually, if they fail to pass this bill or something to replace it, people are going to actually see a tax hike if they've been benefiting from the child tax credit with monthly payments of $300. The Democrats have argued that this has radically cut down on the number of children who are living below the poverty level, and they insist that it should be continued. It's one of many elements of the Build Back Better program that Senator Manchin has objected to. And in almost all of these cases, and I think in this case too, there's probably room for negotiation. And I think those negotiations were underway. So for example, you could cap the maximum income. You could reduce the amount of the credit. You can target it to families of a certain size. There are a number of ways of meeting some of Manchin's concerns. And this is just one of probably about a dozen issues that he's raised over the last month that I think most Democrats thought were capable of being compromised. But apparently something happened between the senator and the White House staff that blew this up. And I have a feeling that it wasn't over the substance of the policy, that it might have been how he was being treated by the White House staff. So I think if, you know, the president's now spoken to Senator Manchin, I'm sure his leadership on Capitol in the Senate has too. And I think they can probably get this back on track.
And we've heard some talk of Senator Mitt Romney, Republican, of course, having his own spin on a different way to approach this kind of child tax credit. It would look pretty different than what was in Build Back Better, I understand. Do you think there's a prospect for a bipartisan plan that would do something in the ballpark?
Well, you know, there's really two legislative paths that can be taken here. The Democrats have taken the path of using a process called reconciliation, mm-hmm. which allows them to get the bill through the Senate with a simple majority. All they need is 50 votes. There'll be 50 Republican votes against, but then the vice president would cast the tie-breaking vote in the favor of the Democrats. What Romney and other Republicans are saying is that they could take up standalone legislation. The problem for the Democrats is that standalone legislation would be subject to a filibuster, and then you'd need 60 votes or a three-fifths majority. And most Democrats don't think there will be enough Republicans for standalone legislation for that path to work. So they're sticking with reconciliation for the time being. Even Senator Manchin has complained a little bit about doing it all in one package through reconciliation. But very few of his Democratic colleagues think that much of this package would pass with almost uniform Republican opposition and the likelihood of a filibuster that cannot be overcome on those separate packages.
We're talking about the Build Back Better plan and what happens now that Senator Joe Manchin says, at least for now, he is not going to support the bill. Stephen Smith is with us from Washington University in St. Louis. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have thoughts on some of the specific policy items in here? Investments in alternative energy, anti-climate change efforts, parental leave funding, pre-K funding. Call it at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. Central Time, I'm Rob Ferret. We're talking about the future of the Build Back Better plan or whether it has a future. Senator Joe Manchin of West Virginia over the weekend said he won't support it, raising concerns about price tags as well as the bill's climate and social spending measures. Without his vote, Senate Democrats don't have the support to pass it, as all 50 Republicans have indicated they'd vote against it. Stephen Smith is with us from Washington University in St. Louis. You can join in with your thoughts or questions at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. I want to listen to some of the response from a fellow Democrat here on the House side, Representative Alexandra Ocasio-Cortez on MSNBC yesterday, criticizing Manchin and the leaders of her party as well.
We have every right to be furious with Joe Manchin, but it's really up to leadership in the Democratic Party who, you know, made the decision to get us to this juncture and how we're going to move forward. And I think right now that Democratic leadership has a very large number of tools at their disposal, the president particularly, and it's really about time that, you know, we take the kid gloves off and we start using them to govern for working families in this country.
What kind of options would President Biden have to enact any of these measures without something from Congress, Steve?
Not many. Mm-hmm. She's venting some steam here, I think. These are some fundamental changes in federal policy, ranging from a range of family-oriented social policies to climate change. And the president is simply unable to do many of those things unilaterally. There are some things in environmental regulation he can do through the administration, but most of what they're proposing here requires new federal law. And so there really isn't much he can do directly. What she was really doing is calling for the president to flexing the muscles of the White House a little bit more. But even there, I think it's hoping for too much. A president is not king. And there is no way that President Biden can force Joe Manchin to vote one way or another on this plan. The other thing to keep in mind is that there really is no Senate plan yet. That's been under negotiation all of this time. So we haven't seen a final plan. In fact, even this week, they've been discussing with the Senate parliamentarian what's allowed or what's not allowed under reconciliation, because it's a budget-related bill and some kinds of policy changes cannot be pursued in reconciliation. So this is still all up for grabs. In fact, the surprise isn't that Biden hasn't succeeded yet. The surprise is that Manchin has decided to make such a public statement on Sunday, issue a long written statement that seemed to close off the possibility of further negotiations. That's the big surprise. And what most Democrats are disappointed about in Manchin is his unpredictability, the fact that he's always coming up with a new problem and sometimes saying he's not likely to support something, then the next thing saying, well, everything is negotiable, and so on. And that's their big frustration with Manchin. Of course, they're also frustrated with their own leadership. Many liberals or progressives in the House and Senate did not want the House to pass the physical infrastructure bill until Manchin and enough Senate Democrats had signed off onto this social infrastructure bill. Well, they backed down on that and allowed the physical infrastructure bill to go through. And now they're saying to their leadership, you talked us into letting that one go through, and to Joe Biden, into letting that one go through. And now it looks like your hope that the social structure bill would quickly is not going to happen. So there's a lot of frustration there. And I think some of that will be aired tonight in the meeting, online meeting that Senate Democrats will be holding.
Go back to our callers at 800-642-1234. Jeff is with us in Superior. Jeff, hi.
Hi, good afternoon. I actually agree with AOC, but instead of muscling the Senate to pass this legislation, I think the Democrats need to think creatively, and I have three suggestions. They could do celebrity endorsements. They could take blue senators and go around to the states and say how this bill will benefit the state. And they could also come up with like a gang of four or five senators, bipartisan, and they could hammer this thing out. I mean, if the American people don't support it, then I don't think it's going to pass.
Jeff, thanks for the call. Do you think Democrats, Steve, who support Build Back Better, need to do a better job of selling it to the public, and that could trickle up, I guess, to Congress?
Yes, but I'd say two things in response. One is most polls actually show that the bill is popular. Sometimes the majorities are quite large in those polls. So I don't think it's been the numbers per se. The real problem are the numbers in the Senate. It's a 50-50 Senate, and you need every Democrat, including Manchin, including Kyrsten Sinema. So getting a gang of four, including some Republicans together, it just won't work. The Republicans, under the direction of Mitch McConnell, have chosen not to participate in any discussions of a reconciliation bill used for this general purpose. So that is simply not going to happen. Now, could they do a better job of selling it? That lands mainly in the lap of the White House. And a case can be made that the president has been spread a little thin. This fall, he's made news by an international trip. Obviously, he's struggling with the pandemic. The issue of voting rights is still pending and will be subject to discussion among Senate Democrats this evening. Maybe the problem is the absence of focus on this one issue as a consistent matter over the last few months. How do you set priorities when you've got things like voting rights on the table as well? It's been a real challenge, and I think most members of Congress would quietly say the White House hasn't done quite the job in public relations that it should have.
Talking to Steve Smith from Washington University, looking at the Build Back Better Act and whether it has a future. Back to your calls now. Ivy is with us in Evansville. Ivy, hi.
Hi. I can't help but wonder how much Joe Manchin's interest in coal influences his attitude towards the Build Back Better plan, and that he keeps finding every reason to not go along with it, I think, ultimately because of clean energy. And if he did come out and say, I'm opposed to clean energy, everybody would say, well, it's a conflict of interest. And I've also heard his daughter has an interest in big pharma. So I keep, the longer he waits, the more it could die, and that would be great for his bottom line and his lobbyists.
So, Ivy, thanks for the call. A twist on that, Steve, just since he made this announcement, the United Mine Workers, the union that represents West Virginia coal miners, said, hey, Senator Manchin, can you rethink this? There's stuff in here that we like. So can you talk about coal, workers and investments, and how that plays into these decisions?
Well, yeah, and of course, Ivy was also talking about the senator's personal investments in the coal industry. And I'm no expert on that, but he clearly has them. And one would hope that they're not greatly affecting his approach to this issue. But clearly, West Virginia has a coal industry interest. And within West Virginia, of course, management interests are not identical to union interests. So there's a diversity of issues here, but it's clear as day that as long as Senator Manchin's been in the Senate, he has not been too keen on clean energy alternatives that would ultimately challenge the preeminence of coal in the production of electricity and in other areas, and so he's continues to resist federal policies that would make other sources of energy cheaper or put some direct penalty like a carbon tax on coal. So there's not much new here. Now, what's a little surprising is that the other Democrats haven't gone farther to try to compensate West Virginia and maybe other states for the economic consequences of these pro-climate changes in public policy that they're proposing. That's the kind of thing that, of course, presumably could be negotiated. And so far, we've only heard the negative side of Senator Manchin's position on that issue. What is crystal clear is that climate change is one of the issues which Democrats think sells very well with moderates and suburban Americans. They don't want to give up on that class of issues in this reconciliation bill. So there's a pretty fundamental difference between Manchin and other Democrats about the agenda for this bill in the area of climate.
In just our last half minute or so, Steve, what are you watching for next on this roller coaster?
Well, one of the challenges for the Senate Democrats is that Manchin always feels compelled to make a comment. And when he does, he brings up yet another issue. I think what we should be looking for is a sign that he's serious about negotiating with the White House. And that means that I think he'll be quiet for a while. These discussions, seriously, these discussions have to be private in order for the president and for Manchin to make much progress.
We'll leave it there. Steve, as always, thanks for joining us.
It's great to be with you, Rob.
Stephen Smith is a distinguished professor of social sciences and professor of political science at Washington University in St. Louis. We talked to them about Senator Manchin's opposition, at least for now, to President Biden's Build Back Better plan, what it means for Democrats' social and climate priorities. Coming up tomorrow on The Morning Show, Grant Barrett from Away With Words joins the show. He's always a lot of fun. It'll be a look at the words and phrases that defined 2021, and you can join in with your nominees. Get started right now. Email ideas@WPR.org with your word of the year. That's tomorrow morning at 8 here on the Ideas Network. What's a 9-letter word for a puzzle where words cross each other? You got it. It's crossword. Not a great clue, but it's a good day for it because it's National Crossword Day. Why today? On this day in 1913, the New York World newspaper released what's believed to be the first published crossword puzzle in their holiday fun section. The first word was filled in for you. The word was fun. Another clue, four letters, what this puzzle is. The answer was hard. I'm a crossword puzzle fan. I go in streaks where I do them a lot, and then I don't do them for a while. I like those weird cryptic crosswords, too. For some reason, I do them in pen. Now, when somebody says that, you might think they're bragging, like, I'm so good, I never make mistakes, so I can use a pen. That's not me. I make mistakes, and then I scribble over them, so it looks like this two-dimensional disaster scene. Why don't I just use pencil? I don't know. This is Central Time on the Ideas Network.